CliffCentral.com.
Right, so I think it's time for some more news stories. If you missed us in the first hour, you can catch that podcast, part one, which brings you all the news headlines, the sports, some positivity, and basically just a rundown of what you need to know in the world. But now you get to get special news from Abali Maloy as she delves deeper into the things that are happening in our world.
Yes, well, Sia mentioned that the police investigation into the motives behind Stephen Paddock's shooting has now shifted to his live-in companion slash girlfriend. Again, depending on which source you're getting the story from, they're calling her either one or the other. But anyway, her name is Mary Lou Danley. And
right. So she's referred to as the 4'11" Asian woman.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that description, but okay.
That was her initial description when she was kind of spotted.
All right. Yeah. Mary Lou Danley, this is now the next person of interest that police are looking to. Apparently, she was last, or rather, she is believed to be in Tokyo currently. In an afternoon news briefing, the Clark County Sheriff Joseph Lombardo said that they had been in conversations with her and that processes are underway to try and bring her back to the United States. Danley is an Austrian citizen reported to have been born in the Philippines, had been sharing Paddock's condo at a retirement community in Nevada.
In a retirement community.
Yes, that's where he stayed, in a retirement community, a retirement village. This is according to police and public records. Investigators were also examining a $100,000 wire transfer that Paddock sent to her account in the Philippines that appears to have been intended for Danley. She is a senior U.S. Homeland Security official. This is all according to police records. So this woman is currently believed to be in Tokyo, but it would seem that processes are underway to try and get her back to the United States to explain why $100,000 was also transferred or wired to her account at around the time that this shooting happened, either a few days before. Yeah, well, it must have been a few days before, because this guy couldn't have done it after he died. So yeah, she's got a few questions to answer, and she is currently the person of interest, according to the police. Now, just to bring it back here at home, Parliament's Finance Committee has demanded that Treasury explain the conditions of its 10 billion rand bailout to SAA. This is still ongoing. It has also questioned the legality of the 3 billion rand transfer that was made to SAA by the NRF. The economic freedom fighters have gone as far as to label the decision to give more of the taxpayers' money to the ailing airline as craziness. If you ask me, the EFF are being polite, calling it craziness.
Indeed.
Treasury General Dondo Mukhajani says that the decision to transfer the funds to SAA was made in the public interest and is in line with the emergency provisions in the law. But as far as Parliament are concerned, they want some questions to be answered, because they suspect that a few laws may have been broken in this most recent bailout. And over time, the plan is to give SAA 10 billion rand in total. It's just that on Friday they started by with the first installment of 3 billion.
But like, how just try to actually digest all of that. How out of touch are you with the public interest if you believe that giving this airline more money is in the public interest?
Well, because the Treasurer Directorate General believes that SAA is eventually going to recover and they're going to go back to being a profitable business. And he says that as soon as that happens, then the public will benefit from it.
All right. So 10 billion. Let's try work this out. 10 billion. 10 billion. Okay, that's how many zeros?
Nine.
I can't put that much money into that many numbers into a calculator. 10 billion.
Over time, it will amount to 10 billion rand.
All right. Now, what's the repayment on that? 10 billion. Let's just say they're going to run a profit. Let's just say a million a month they're going to make back. They're going to do so well, SAA.
Okay.
They're going to do so well. This is how incredible SAA is. They're going to make a profit of a million rand a month.
All right.
Right now they're losing, what, 200 million a week, whatever. They're going to turn it around to the point where they're going to be able to pay back this loan at a million a month. You know how many million goes into a 10 billion?
110. Maths is not our strong suit.
It's
Ben.
Not our strong suit. So let's just cut to the chase. How many years, how many lifetimes, how many generations, centuries will it be in hypothetical math terms that these dipshits will ever be able to pay back $10 billion from a company that does not know how to be a company?
But
because as I said, it's going to make money. It's going to be a worthwhile investment. A worthwhile investment is me. Say, for instance, I buy Sia a laptop, okay? And Sia's going to get a job with that laptop, and he's going to pay me back with interest. That's an investment, and it's plausible, and it can happen today. Giving these guys money, they don't make money, so they don't return anything to your investment. That whole phrase, return of investment, the return of is missing in this whole equation.
I wonder whether SAA have ever paid back any loan or any bailout that they have received previously, because they have been running at a loss for quite some time now, which that would mean that they have not been able to pay back the money.
You know,
this is not the first time that they have been bailed out. So what makes you think that they would be, that they're going to pay back this $10 billion?
So when they go in front of whoever they go and to justify this, you know, I'm a massive fan. Everything can be resolved with conversation, reason, and our words, because I believe that we've evolved to this point. But you know the only way to actually resolve the situation? So whenever someone's talking about this thing, the only way it can happen is this. You go up to them and you go, are you stupid? And you smack this person in the head a few times, because it's only going to get to this point. Someone needs to take a clap in the face and just told to behave. This is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Someone needs to take a punch in the face for this, because this is where it's got.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing that I have a problem with. Our proposed solution to fixing our problems is always someone needs to. We need to, Ben. I mean, I feel like we need
I'll
to.
I'll make the smack. I'll smack this person.
I feel like we all need to have a giant cattle prod shoved up our anuses as a country, so that we can all just get up and do something as a collective to force the solutions that we want for this country.
I agree.
Because we're always talking about someone needs to. It's always somebody else's problem. No, it is our problem. It is currently sitting in our laps.
It's so true. And I'm sorry to say this. It might sound militant, but we need to maybe force some sort of a coup or whatever, just to go in there and just kick the crap out of these people who are just so stupid and are ruining everything for everyone. Because if we sit back and we go, well, I don't think that's a good idea, or if the DA takes someone to court, or if the EFF calls someone, it doesn't get us anywhere. We've tried. We've been nice for too long.
Yeah.
Sorry, so you're also on the show here. I must not forget that ever.
Look, I'll be the very first person to hope for positivity and for peace, but I really am, you know, standing by and supporting this whole someone must be clapped situation, because I don't think the repercussions are bad enough.
There are no repercussions.
There are no repercussions.
Far too many people get away with.
It's just like, okay, let's run a
criminal
company.
Just insane behavior.
Let's run a company to the ground.
If you were to present what we've just spoken about to anybody of a neutral mindset who doesn't understand this country of South Africa, doesn't understand politics or whatever, you would say, okay, right, so you've given money to a child, because this is what it sounds like, because there's no recourse to what's going on here. So you've given money to a spoiled brat.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I'm old school, obviously. I was born in the 80s. If you were a child and you just showed no respect and you were just stupid and you were wasteful and you were disrespectful, you got a clap. And you knew from that moment, because pain was associated with your actions, you must not do those actions anymore. So yeah, I just think it's what it's come down to.
Yeah.
We're going to have people shamblockings.
You will need like a very...
Oh, you know what we need?
What?
We need...
Where's that spank thingy? Oh, never mind.
So yes, punishment, not pleasure.
Oh, never.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We are kidding ourselves if we think we're above violence as people.
You know,
probably you were saying, what do we need?
You know who we need? We need that giant henchman, what's this
mountain.
Woman's name? Is it the mountain?
From Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
That the big guy who's always by the queen's side. What's the queen's name again?
Cersei.
Yes, that's who we need.
Yeah, we need a mountain.
We need a mountain.
We need a state mountain. So when things don't go well, They're going to go, well, look, Malusi, we've given you three times to kind of justify this. We now have to bring in the state mountain. Whoa. Okay, well, guys, okay, look, they're not getting any more money.
Exactly.
Dudumiani's gone tomorrow. Are you sure? Because the mountain's outside. And they'll go, no. Cool. Guys, we're done. We're done. Dudu's out. She's out. Okay, cool. So I mustn't call the state mountain. No. I promise. This will never happen again.
Yeah.
What? Interesting times you live in.
There we go. Again, we're solving everything on this show.
This is what we do, man. This is what we do. A state mountain. All right. Now, Ben, you mentioned earlier that you are in a long distance relationship, which sounds to me like you're going through a bit of a difficult time.
And you're
lonely, Ben.
Yeah.
You're lonely. That's what you are. Now, scientists are saying that loneliness may be a greater public health hazard than obesity.
Ooh.
Wow. So I'm not even comfort eating. So,
wow.
So as more people opt to live alone, to delay or forgo marriage, because a lot more people are doing that these days, and we're all receding into our smartphone lives, you know, rates of loneliness are skyrocketing. And according to new research out of the United States, it is of a great concern. Researchers believe loneliness is also deadly because it can lead to a number of issues, including disrupted sleep patterns. Not too long ago, we were talking about just how dangerous a lack of sleep is to our health. Loneliness leads to high levels of stress hormones, increased inflammation, and worsening immune systems. Any of those risk factors puts people at a greater risk for disease as well as life-threatening injury. So according to this research, there are far too many of us who are lonely.
Well, that's why Akon made that song so long ago. That was probably the only reason.
He had great foresight back then already.
I'd have to say, as someone who loves and enjoys the company of people, I love spending time alone even more. And I often think about this, like, really, like, what if I decide to never get married? What if I never have kids? What if I don't even have a pet and I'm all by my lonesome? I would rather be in that position because I can still opt, if I really do feel lonely, to go out and see my friends or to go out for lunch. But if you're just stuck with people you don't like, for example, you're in a marriage you don't like and you're stuck with the same person, no thanks. I'd far rather be in the position where I am lonely in some instances and then I just combat it by going out for lunch than to be stuck with people I don't want to be stuck with. Does that make sense?
Look, I've always believed that some people handle loneliness better than others. Because for
in
some
what way?
Because you find those people who, say for example, you find somebody who has never been single in their entire adult life because they cannot stand being alone.
Yeah.
They jump from one spouse to the next. Now, to me, somebody like that struggles with being by themselves and in their own space and having, you know, their own quiet time versus people who will tell you that, you know, relationships for them are far too demanding and rather they prefer to be by themselves because that's just a preference of theirs.
Yeah.
So I've always thought that, well, you know, all that means is that some of us handle loneliness better than others, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I guess.
I think my level of being alone reached a whole sad new stage when I woke up on Monday morning and I'd fallen asleep on my couch.
Alone?
Alone.
Pants on or off?
Pants on.
Very good.
And the TV was still on because I fell asleep catching up on some things. And I had a packet of chips right to my face. And I was wearing the most hideous pajamas as well. And I woke up thinking, goodness, I'm so grateful I don't have anyone around me because no one actually deserves to wake up and see this first thing in the morning. It was bad, really bad.
Okay. Well, according to this new study, what's really bad is loneliness, apparently, for all of us, because it causes all sorts, or rather, it puts us at risk for all types of diseases, life-threatening injury. They're now saying that it's a bigger public health hazard than obesity.
Yeah, I heard it makes you oversleep terribly as well.
Really?
Yeah. And just on that, Gareth's not with us, but he is still alive, in case you're wondering.
Yes. Folks, Hugh Hefner has been buried.
Well, yeah, because he hasn't got a wife like Casey Kasem that wants to hold his body forever.
This is a bit of a shock to me.
Why? When people die, they get buried.
Absolutely, but I thought it would be more of a spectacle. It would be grander. It would be bigger. It would be an occasion of note. But Hugh Hefner's widow, Crystal, has broken her silence following his death at the age of 91. She spoke to People magazine and she confirmed that Hugh was buried over the weekend in a private funeral ceremony attended just by family.
Nice.
That's the classy way to do it.
Oh, guys.
What more do you want?
I want Playboy bunnies.
Who
gave me this idea? Someone was talking about a 21 boob salute.
21 cup salute.
Yes, 21 cup salute. Exactly.
Yeah, but see, I mean, this is what the public wants. What it comes down to is, what if you actually cared about Hugh in a personal capacity, mm-hmm. you don't want a fanfare to greet a moment where you could be mourning. It's the last thing you want.
But he lived such a public life, and not just if you randomly followed him on Twitter. But I mean, if he
wasn't a very public person? He had a public life, but in a personal capacity, mm-hmm. he was rather private.
But what if you were one of the playmates who lived in the playmate house next door?
He didn't care about you even when you were living there.
Ooh, just only cared about you.
Well, say it. Say it. You crass bastard. Say it.
No, but JJ is classy. That's it.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm actually surprised by this. But yeah, excuse Crystal. We still don't know whether you've been kicked out of the mansion or not. We don't know who's going to take care of you after this. But wow, I'm surprised.
Well, I'm sure the new owners will have her hanging around gladly.
She's only 31. She'll be starting a new life next week.
But I told you, that she will find a new multimillionaire.
Do you think she'll try to make money off you for now? Write a book?
See, the thing is, these tell-all books, when I think Hugh would be far too smart, he would have covered that base already. So he would have people in place now for the next 5 years working with anybody to write a book. They'll be paid to rubbish it.
A reality show?
Basically say, well, you know, it's their word against his. Because some people will want to come out and say certain things. Where was I? Actually, I think it was Holly Madison.
Mm-hmm.
So she was the number one girlfriend back in the day, the show.
The now Playboy Bunnies.
Yeah, so she wrote a book.
Down the Rabbit Hole.
Yeah, a few years ago, where she basically threw it all out there. Exactly what life of a Playboy Bunny is, what's expected of you, what happens. And she was just someone, she really was that stereotypical story of a small town girl wanting to strike it into Hollywood and the glitz and the glamour. And she got caught up in the whole Playboy mansion scheme, and she spilled the beans on it. And she said, look, it is what it is. I knew what I was getting into. All the girls did. And it's never as glamorous or as fun as you think. And it's hard work and it's kind of depressing. But she said, it's either this or I go back to small town somewhere pouring coffee for truckers.
Yeah, but I honestly don't know who in their right mind thinks that that kind of lifestyle is glamorous, though. You are required to have sex with a 90-year-old.
That's what she said. It is expected of you to have sex with them.
There is nothing glamorous about that. I don't care how much money you are being paid for it. The actual act of it is repugnant.
But you got $1,000 a week clothing allowance.
Yes. But the actual act of doing it is still disgusting as all hell. He's an old man.
Yeah.
Like, who in their right mind thinks that that's glamorous?
I think what's actually worse for me, I don't know, maybe because you can close your eyes during those moments and you can picture your new Louis Vuitton bag and he'll be done in 3.2 minutes. I find the act of...
I imagine it's kind of like a turtle.
You
know that sound the turtles make?
But all the Viagra he must have been on, though.
I'm surprised he didn't die of a Viagra overload. But for me, like, it's the idea that you have to wake up and you see his face first thing in the morning. His leathery hands caress you when you don't want to be caressed. You have to kiss the... That I find worse.
No, it's disgusting.
Way worse.
It is totally revolting.
And you also have to pretend to be interested in this person. You have to really fake loving them. Or maybe they were genuinely in love.
I think it got to the point where they didn't even care about making out like they cared. Because they would all be at the dinner table. This is again from the book. They'd all be at the dinner table and all the girls would just be there fake smiling.
Yeah.
And there was never a vibe of anything being exciting or fun. And you could tell the new people coming in.
Oh.
It goes Hugh.
Wow. Is that how it sounded?
There he is at 91. And, okay, Hugh, enough.
Okay.
See, and that was Holly's face. So Holly was saying that you could always tell the new girls because they were the ones arriving thinking this is going to be so much fun. And the girls that had been there for a few months, they were like, yeah, pass the potatoes.
Oh my goodness.
That's so funny, Hugh.
And then you would be required to go to all the different celebrity events with him.
Yeah, and every night, your night would end, gratitude journal, and...
Do you know how painstaking it is if you are stuck, for example, in a meeting and you have to be fake nice to someone? And how draining that is, even if it's 30 minutes and you have to laugh at the jokes that aren't funny and you have to smile just because maybe you just want the business. Take that 30 minutes and multiply it to a whole life of living with someone like that.
Mm. Yeah, well, look, but it's a job because, again, you have a curfew. You can't be out past 9 o'clock.
Mm.
But this is the job you sign up for. Everyone in life thinks that, oh, I'll live this magical fairy tale, whatever. Hello? Everyone's got a job. If 90-year-old Dick was your job...
Mm.
That was your choice.
No, absolutely. It was all their choices. And, you know, as we've seen with the likes of Holly Madison and Kendra Wilkinson, they went on to become actual stars from that experience.
Better life than they would have had, yeah.
Yeah, and they are sitting on millions of dollars of, millions of dollars. So seemingly they benefited from the choice that they made.
So Kendall was a prime story of the American dream. Sleep with an old white guy so you can marry a young black guy.
Kendall?
Kim
Kardashian?
Kendrick.
No.
Kendra.
Oh, Kendra.
Sorry.
I mean, Kendrick. All these, I'm like, I don't
all these names
Kendrick
that
Lamar.
Only appeared 20 years ago, I mean, they all sound the same.
Yeah, really.
So on the messages here on the WhatsApp, you guys forget that one day you're going to be old. See you in Mubs.
No, I don't forget that. I don't forget it for 1 second.
And for me, that's why I don't really judge Hef. I think I've said this before. If I had tons of money and I was old, I would.
Everyone
get a little young. Thank.
Exactly. That's your thing. You would cash in daily.
But I'm not saying it's an easy thing to do for the younger person who's getting into it.
Of course not. Back to having the state mountain. I think this is Vinny said somebody with big droopy balls who just teabagged Malusi Gigaba. He will never give money to SA ever again. A smack will just make his eyes bigger than they already are. Well, look, I mean, the state mountain can go into teabagging if needs be. Obviously, this you can mix it up how he administers the beatings.
We can become very creative with the types of torture that he inflicts on his victims.
Look, I think the state mountain could also just set fire to his suits. Malusi's suits.
He would take that very personally, yeah. And I think it would hurt his feelings.
Because it is. It's like, okay, cool. You want to give SAS some more money? Right. Basically, we're taking all your suits from you.
All right. A quick wrap up on the Hugh Hefner story. It didn't take long, but plans are already in motion for a big motion picture. This didn't take long at all.
Out of time, yeah.
And it appears that the director behind the upcoming Hugh, what's his name again? Hefner. Hugh Hefner biopic, Brett Ratner, that's the director. He was speaking to the Hollywood Reporter and he says that he has already found his leading man, Jared Leto. According to Ratner, he says, Jared is an old friend and he told me, I want to play him. I want to understand him. And Ratner says that he really believes that Jared can do it. That he is one of the great actors of today.
Maybe
so,
a bit too pretty to play Hef, though.
Well, you know, Leto can ugly it up if he puts some effort into it.
The thing about Jared Leto is that he's quite androgynous, so he could also look like a girl, mostly because of his sparkling eyes.
Yeah.
He is a bit of a chameleon, though.
Yes.
When he acts.
Look, makeup and all that kind of stuff. Actors are actors. They can transform, all that kind of stuff.
Yes. So,
I just think that Hugh had that sort of working man's ruggedness about him.
I suppose we'd have to look at pictures of a younger Hugh Hefner and then Jared would kind of base his transformation on that.
Exactly.
You know, he could even go as far as wearing contact lenses because Hugh, it would seem, had brown eyes, and Jared, as you say,
he had brown, dull eyes.
Jared has these sparkling blue eyes. So yeah, I mean, I think that he could really turn it up.
Look, I think it'd be a good movie. As again, we know, we spoke about Hugh Hefner last week when he did actually die, and that what that guy went through, the sexual revolution he was so prime positioned in, the generations that he went through. I mean, this guy was old. So this guy, he knows of war. I mean, he knows of, okay, not prohibition, but Hugh Hefner's life went through many, 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 many things.
Mm.
So it'll be a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're not convinced, yeah.
No, because it was such an open book.
You're a hard
book.
Sell, yeah.
No, he's such an open book. He's done many interviews. He even had the girls of the Playboy Mansion. So it's not like I personally won't be running to watch it because there's nothing that we don't know.
No, but this is the thing about storytelling, Sia. This is what you never forget about good movie makers, is that they can create something with angles and the way it's shot and what they highlight in the story, and you'll learn something completely new. You know,
I guess so.
How does History Channel still carry on? You know, I was watching a documentary on Netflix even about the Second World War.
Mm.
We all know what happened in the Second World War, right? Hitler was a dick. The Russians were also dicks. Italians liked them for a bit, but they didn't have the follow through to be dicks. And England and America were the heroes. I mean, everyone knows the story.
Mm-hmm.
They are still making fresh stuff around this.
Mm, and it's still interesting as well.
It's still interesting. They're still finding stories. They're still finding ways of repackaging something, which has been told for decades. I'm pretty sure they'll find something fresh here.
I guess so. And you know, TMZ being TMZ, they released a picture last week of someone inside the mansion who took a picture just before Hef passed away. So maybe it might have been even a few weeks before he passed away. And he was really, really looking frail. At 91 years old, it was of Hugh standing and using a walker, basically.
Yep.
And people are all standing around him trying to...
He's gonna haunt the living crap out of that house. You know who has bought the house? Because you know, there was always talk about there being a Playboy Mansion ghost.
He'll be the main one now.
Of course they will.
The ghost dry humping visitors or something.
All the time, there's going to be a ghost in that place, and you're going to be hearing it over and over and over. You'll be coming home at night, and all of a sudden, you're just going to hear...
Oh, God.
Oh. What's that? Is that the floorboards? Nice. Hugh again. He's haunted the house.
Oh.
Right, moving swiftly along. You're looking for a spot to host your year-end function, or a private event, even. Well, Rockets Bryanston has many options available just for you, from the beautiful designs of their private dining room to their rooftop lounge with spectacular views of the city, where you can let your hair down and enjoy great company and style at Rockets Bryanston. Contact Bryanston, that's BRYANSTON, at rocketslife.tv for more information. Rockets, it's a lifestyle. So yeah, what have we got next?
Well, we have a interview with Lerato Shabalala, who's our host of Living It Up with Lerato, speaking to Gareth, along with the sponsor of this. Can we? I not have that.
He's haunting
please.
Our show now. Stop it, Hugh. Sorry, Sia.
Can I not have that, please? Thank you. As they get to know the sponsor of the show, who is Rally Mampuel. Rally is a real estate mogul, and I don't often use that word for people who do not deserve it, but he is really amazing. Just let me put this to you before the interview. At 21 years old, Rally got into real estate and he made a bid for property worth 21 million rands.
What a story.
He sold the property completely off and he made a profit of 6 million rands. This dude is now not
Take
even 40
SAA.
Years old. And let me just say, when he came in here a few days ago to record the interview, he came in with a certain swanky car with a driver. So you want to listen to this guy and what he has to say, because he explains how he was able to make money off property without actually having money to start. So that's an interesting one.
That is the dream, and here it is.
A little while ago, CliffCentral.com launched a brand new show featuring someone who we've known for a long time and who's a member of our family, Lerato Shabalala, who has returned to the fold. And, of course, she's very well known from the Urban Miss column back in the Sunday Times to being the former editor of True Love magazine, her own book, which we discussed not so long ago, The Way I See It, and living it up with Lerato, which is every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on cliffcentral.com, which is brought to you by Raleigh Properties. Now, Raleigh Mampwele is the other guest that we want to meet this morning, and I'm not going to be unfair, Lerato, if I spend more time talking to Raleigh than you, because
I'm used to talking.
I get to see you all the time.
Yeah. And
you've had Raleigh a couple of times on your show. I remember the first time I heard of him and I met him through you. I discovered the story of this man. You know, a lot of people like to throw around the word entrepreneur. You know, they will say, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. They have these rubbish little businesses where they have sold 10 paper clips and they call themselves an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
The way this guy talks and the kinds of things he's achieved in his life, it's nothing short of the perfect example of entrepreneurship.
Totally, totally.
And there's so many things about his story that I think are inspiring for young people who are thinking of going into their own businesses, thinking of starting their own thing. He said something the other day, and it's been bugging me for like weeks, Raleigh. You put something in my head. You said you don't have to have a lot of money
to make money in property. So that's what actually made me pay attention to Raleigh, because you know me, I was like, ah, BS, there's no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
And once he said that, I wanted to spend as much time interrogating it with him. And I think it's his tagline. I think it's your tagline,
yeah.
Raleigh.
Yeah, you do not need money to make money in real estate.
Well, you got to teach us how, and hopefully by the end of this discussion, or at very least the series on Living It Up with Lerato, we will have figured out something to do with your mind. To you, it's very clear. To us, it's still not 100%.
Mm.
So first of all, congratulations on joining our stable of talent here and on your show with Lerato, because the number of times you have been on, you've added tremendous value. I mean, things about home loans that I had no idea about, things about interest rates, things about how you can fix up properties, turning a little four-bedroom in the townships into something amazing, and maintaining the character of some of these houses, which I think comes from, in your case, a real love of property.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Gareth, and thanks for having me on your show.
Sure. It's a pleasure. It's long overdue. The only reason we haven't had it sooner is because you've been so busy.
Yeah, he's never here. In fact, he's leaving just tonight to take his kids on holiday. But Bradley, for people who don't understand, what does that mean that you don't need money to make money in real estate?
Yeah, well, basically, I started at the age of 21. I bought a new development in Midrand. For his amount, which I didn't have in my pocket or in my balance sheet. So just to give an example, I bought the development for 21 million rand at 21.
And, seems like a very sort of fortuitous, it's almost predestined thing.
Yeah.
21 million, 21?
Yeah, and I didn't, you know, but what I knew was that there was a demand of properties in Midrand during those times. So I was an estate agent, and the developer wanted me to sell 60 units of townhouses. And what I then did, I said to him, look, I've done my own competitive market analysis, and I think that the property will definitely be worth more than 21 million rand. Can I then increase the prices? He said, no, Riley, I'm not interested. I've done my numbers. I'm happy to go ahead on the market, to the market for 21 million rand. I then came up with an idea, because I knew there was a gap of a clear good 6 million rand difference between what he's asking and what the market will be willing to pay. And then I made an offer. I had 2, 3, 4 weekends where I sat in an umbrella next to the new development that we were selling. And I called a few of my friends, one of them was Yvonne Chaka Chaka, and other people, to say, look, I can help you to be able to own a couple of properties with one salary. That was during the good times where you could actually get 4 home loans at a go with one salary. So I empowered other people to be able to buy 3, 4, 5 townhouses. And within a space of 30 days, I had sold all the properties, and I had more than 26 million rand and worth of guarantees. And I went to an attorney who then obviously created what we call one bank guarantee for 21 million rand. And at 21, I had made myself 6 million rand. That is just a typical example of saying you do not need money to make money in real estate.
It's called gearing.
It's called, well, definitely it's the art of gearing. So that's the beauty about real estate. So if you're in a position where you can be able to capitalize on the income that you have, you'll then be able to borrow more. and we can talk more about that.
Can we just start at the beginning of your story? I know for a lot of people, they may have already heard this when Lerato gave you your introduction in the beginning. Mm. But I think for a lot of people, there are loads of South Africans who are talented, who are very intelligent, who have opportunities thrown in front of them all the time, and they don't see it. They focus on all the reasons why they are not successful. They focus on all the reasons why nobody seems to give them a leg up.
Yeah.
You didn't have any advantages. You were a hardworking guy. I mean, you started off selling like Boerewors rolls next to the side of the road.
Yeah. So basically, I was doing my studying for my BCom with UNISA during studying part time I used to drop off my younger sisters at school in Fourways, and I saw an opportunity during lunchtime when I drive back with them, stuck in a little bit of traffic, and maybe I even had lunch, and I said, well, it would be nice. This was during the time we didn't have a lot of drive-thrus then, like where you could just drive to McDonald's or so. So I decided, because I was a dreamer, and I just thought I need to do something for myself to have money to continue to pay for my school fees and paw petrol because I was also selling, just starting to become an assistant real estate agent. And I thought, let me start this. And I went and I went to Macro and I bought a little briar stand and I started to sell Boerewors rolls. That didn't last too long because obviously I kept on dreaming bigger. And then I left one of my younger sisters when she finished her matric to be there, and then we end up hiring somebody to sell the Boerewors rolls. But that's just the background. But I think most entrepreneurs that I've spoken to that have done well in mining and other sectors, they'll even tell you that they were selling sweets at school while other students were doing other things.
I mean, this is the difference between you and the people who wish they were successful. Because to you, it never occurred that this was a job beneath you to sit there making Boerewors rolls.
Yes.
I mean, for most of us, Lerato, and I don't think I speak just for me, there are a lot of young people, and I'm not even that young anymore, who imagine that somehow they're just going to climb that ladder of success.
Oh, yeah.
That they don't have to start off doing horrible
No, they're going
to
start with the corner office with a view of Joburg, okay? And they will have exec in their title.
And social media, this stuff does not help because it shows people having their best lives. That's it doesn't show the stuff that they're doing to get there.
Yeah, there is no paying of dues. There is a sense of instant
gratification
CEO-ness.
And power. I was going to ask you, you started off then in real estate as an estate agent, another non-glamorous job.
Yeah.
Commission-based.
You don't earn big money. What you earn is only what you sell.
Yeah.
And you have to work for someone else, and it's horrible hours while everyone else is enjoying their Sundays. You have to show off houses and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You sit under an umbrella with pamphlets.
Yeah. It's not easy. It's not easy stuff. So you're quite right, Gareth. I mean, maybe it's about time that maybe entrepreneurs should be featured as and when they start in their career, because what generally happens is that you work hard for a good 10. I've been in the industry now for 17 years, and, people see the things now sometimes, and actually you end up being in trouble. I mean, the other time I went to a funeral and, people didn't know about me, and I happened to have come with a nice car there, and journalists wanted to write about this because they're so used to. And when I told the journalist my story, he said, listen, I happened to have come to this funeral with this fancy car because, that's what I wanted to come with. But you don't need to go and badmouth me, so because guys are used to.
Are you talking about jealousy?
Well, it's not necessarily jealousy, but I think people are used to instant success, as you were saying. Right. So when they see a black person maybe driving a fancy car, they think, well, you just got a tender last week.
Tenders.
Yeah. And they hear the 26 million without realizing that the Boerewors source and the estate agency of life came first.
So, but the point I wanted to make, Gareth, is that it's important to probably showcase when entrepreneurs are starting out and how long it takes.
But this is also, there's a uniquely difficult situation for black entrepreneurs to deal with. And you've just hit on it now. Like among white and black people, when they see a black person doing really well suddenly, immediately get suspicious.
Mm. Yeah.
They don't investigate the backstory. Mm. They don't look at it necessarily. They go, must be some kind of corruption.
Yeah.
So, okay. What a horrible starting point in people's minds. You know, they always say that the first impression lasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that's how people feel about so many successful young black people, it's no wonder that they can't get a leg up and they can't get ahead from there on. Because people will go, oh, well, he must have got that money from government.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, you're quite right. But
it's horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. But I think also, maybe then the entrepreneurs out there should actually showcase the ones that have actually did it. Because there's nothing wrong actually to do business with government, but
no, sure.
The ones that also have just done it in the private sector, I mean, I think it's important for them to showcase that so that they become role model to other entrepreneurs because it's more sustainable. If you talk of the guys like Vusi, you know, he always speaks about black solutions for black problems.
Oh, Vusi Tembagwayo, yes.
Yes. And I think it's right on point. We need to be able to be in a position where we're starting to have businesses that are created by black entrepreneurs as well in the country, or any entrepreneurs for the fact, new things. I mean, if you look at the banks, sometimes they think differently. I mean, I'm with a certain bank, and I won't mention name. I see Lalato was also on Twitter talking about banks, and she didn't mention names, but I'm not going to mention them either. But I wanted to tell you that I was there, and they said, well, Riley, we see you got a little bit of this that you can invest. And I said, yes, do that. And they wanted to tell me where they're going to invest the money. And then I asked them, which side, where are you going to invest? And they said to me, well, we're going to invest with this group and this group. And none of those groups were, and these were property groups, were not black owned.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked them, and I'll mention this company. I said, where is the Rebosses, which is a black owned, first black owned listed company?
Mm.
And that specific bank said, well, they're a bit of a high risk. We are not investing there. So what that means, it means that black people will need, this is a listed company that is owned by CISA, which is the first black owned, real estate company that is listed in the JSE. And what I learned from that is that there's a lot of money that has been invested in the country by even black churches and black entrepreneurs and all those tenderpreneurs that, you know, as we call them. But that money actually doesn't go to reinvest in some of the black businesses.
Mm.
So what needs to happen? We need to be able to understand when there's a new bank, like now there's a new bank called Vendor Bank, we should be supporting those type of banks because they will go all the way and look at entrepreneur and actually invest in that business.
Yeah.
I know they've given Jacob Zuma a home loan, so we won't go there. But again, they gave a home loan in the rural areas, you know. So
which people desperately need, I want to talk to you about that in a second because there's obviously a revolution in property that has to happen in this country. Yeah. But before we get to that, $6 million you made off your first deal in 21. You put that straight back into property.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you see, for most of us, you'd go,
I have mama made it. Okay.
Call up
Bentley and tell them I am ready.
But you put that straight back into more property.
Yes. Yeah. So I reinvested. I mean, I started to buy properties, land, and, obviously I was a young person at 21 and I had a bit of fun as well. I bought myself a little small car.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that real estate is one of those industries that actually naturally help you to be disciplined, because you will know that if I buy the property today for R1 million, in 10 years' time, it'll be worth X amount. So based on the fact that I was in the real estate industry, I automatically invested in the real estate industry and bought more land and started to get involved in property development as well. So.
But it's not just you had money and you made more money. I mean, you have to be really smart about this. So you knew that investing in certain properties would get you a higher return.
Hmm.
You also watched when it was a buyer's or a seller's market.
Yes.
You paid attention to what the value of the actual place was, because you would develop a keen eye for this stuff. You can walk into a development that's just started. I'll bet you'll be able to say, this is the maximum I'd be willing to pay for this.
Yeah.
That's just a skill you learn in experience, right?
Yeah. No, definitely. And, we speak with Dorato during our podcast, and we always say the gearing is important. So one of the things that happen is that when you've got a bit of an income, you start saying to yourself, well, I've got an extra 200,000 at work or something. You can use that money to be able to – I mean, let me just give you an example. So – We bought a new development recently about 2 months ago at Waterfall. It's a huge office park that we bought now for just under 400 million We didn't have 400 million, but what we did, we had a bit of capital which could be able to give us a 10% deposit.
Mm.
With that 10% deposit, we went, we managed to acquire a 400 million rand asset by putting down a 10% deposit and went to the bank and said, we've got a national tenant that will be able to rent the building for 10 years. Based on that, we don't have the 400 million, but we have the 10%. Can the bank give us the balance? They give us the balance of the money so that we can put a national tenant there. So that's what we mean by the art of gearing. So one of the things that we did during those time when after I sold that development, I took the money to put deposit into small other townhouses, and some of them we kept till now. And when we sell, we then manage to be able to have a bit of cash flow to be able to get into this type of opportunities. So gearing in real estate is the number one rule that you must work on, if not after the location.
So we know that only about 2% of the world's population actually own property across the whole world.
Sure.
So it's a very tiny percentage of all humans who will ever own the land that they live in or use.
Yeah.
And in South Africa, we've obviously got a very unequal distribution of land.
Yeah.
What we also have is we have massive amounts of rural land which are run by
tribal
or traditional structures.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people will never get the title deed to land that they actually already occupy and should have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This to me seems like a no-brainer. And it is paperwork.
It's like paperwork.
No one else is claiming that property except the family who live on it. Mm. No one else has a claim on that property except the family who live on it. If they had that, they could do what you're talking about. They could take loans against that property to build a small business, to buy more property, to do things with. It is the key for rural and urban populations to immediately emancipate themselves from the slavery. Isn't it obvious?
Completely. I mean, that was actually part of the reasons why I wanted to start the podcast. I mean, like, I think one of the things you hear a lot in South Africa at the moment, the narrative, as the woke kids like to say, is, oh, bring back our land. Hashtag bring back our land. And the thing is, what I wanted to say to people is, it's not enough to want the land back. Once you've got it, what do you do with it? Well, how do you acquire it even?
That's fine, but even just, this is just paperwork.
Yes, exactly.
There should be nothing to stop this from happening.
Exactly.
You know, Gary,
imagine how many rallies there could be out there who could start with the property they already are living in.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Gareth, I think you are hired. I mean, now you're a serious property expert. You know, that's a good point you raised. So if you really think about it, this can create a lot of jobs as well, because what will happen, the paperwork that you're mentioning, it means that somebody has to go and do the town planning. So you got a lot of town planners that are qualified, who are not employed. They could actually go on Google Earth and Google Maps and check where the homelands are and actually start rezoning that. You then need engineers to be able to put services.
Mm.
You need the architects to start designing the urban areas and all of those things, urban design. So you can employ so many people. Then you need to go to the deeds office. So can you imagine the workload at the deeds office, where you've got millions of title deeds that are going to be issued to the individuals? You're going to have to hire more people to work at the deeds office. It creates a lot of opportunities. And at the end game is that it's going to be somebody with a title deed that can go and actually get a 400,000-500,000 bond and use that money to start a business or to invest in real estate.
But these people shouldn't have to pay for the property they're already on. I mean, whether it's a tiny little shack you've got in an informal settlement, or because
a homestead.
What else is that property for? It's not going to be used for anything else. It should be just given to whoever's occupying it at the moment. I know that's controversial.
No, it's true.
This is where I don't buy all this stuff about how we need to expropriate certain. There's also plenty of land that government
currently
owns.
Yeah.
Government owns so much land. You know, you look at the registry.
Yeah,
there's just huge tracts of land that aren't being used that could be turned into industrial property, that could be turned into residential, commercial property, and that young black people could also find as their space to just take some dignity back.
That's true.
From the system. If you own something, if you can even show a piece of paper that you own 5 square meters, it's better than owning nothing.
Yeah, totally.
No, that's true, and you take pride in that. I mean, you know, you'll think twice to drop a piece of paper on the floor, on the ground, if you know that this is your area and this is where you invested. And I think that's what's happening in Johannesburg Central. People don't own those properties, you know, and based on that, they just feel, well, what does it mean?
Can use it and abuse it. Yeah. It's like a rental car.
Yeah.
Nobody respects a rental
car.
No, not really. But so, in the big picture,
yeah,
someone like you is positioned very well in this country at the moment to also help young, aspirational, middle-class black people often to acquire their first property.
Mm. Yeah.
And your advice to them, and I've heard this being discussed on the podcast already, your advice to them is to start as early as you can. Why pay someone else's rent?
Yes. Yeah. So we've got a couple of things that we've sort of done. Obviously, as part of the little success that I have, I've created a learnership called the Rally Mampilo Learnership. And the aim of the learnership is actually to bring new blood into the old vein of real estate.
Mm.
And one of the things that we do is that we sponsor people that want to study real estate. So in the last 12 months, we've taken a good 12 students out to go study at the universities, because fortunately now there are universities that actually are offering real estate courses. So we spent a quarter of a million rand to take the students to go and study real estate, and some of them are going to be in fact, we started doing this a while ago, and we've got graduates that are coming up in the next year or so. And part of the things that we've done also is that we've got companies, just in Midran alone, we've created about 4 to 6 proper real estate companies from both the young black and the young South Africa. We've got a guy called Gordon Rose, fantastic young guy who came and joined our company as an estate agent. And he was just a dreamer as well. And now he's running his own business in Midran. But when it comes to the side of personal buying your own properties, we always encourage that, because it definitely doesn't make sense for you to be renting if you can own the property. So, Lerato, I think sometime last week or so, she was discussing the issue of home loans, and we were saying that the banks must come to the party as well, because what happened is that it's easy for them to finance a car versus a home loan. So you find that a young person earns 20,000-30,000 rand a month, and they go and they want to buy a property, and they get told that, well, either you don't have a good credit history. Based on that, give it a bit of time. That young person then goes and buys a car. And once they do that, when they come back to apply for a home loan 6 months later, they say, well, now you've got a car. We don't think you can afford both. You know, so it's one of those. But
it's tragic.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
Do you feel sometimes that if we just had a little growth in the economy, it would also help?
I do.
I mean, it's not the best. It's not the most conducive environment to people, first of all, making enough money to be able to own even their primary residence, but then to be able to invest in other properties.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing that we see now, Gareth, is like I found out last week, I saw in the papers that Pick n Pay is going to start selling food on credit. Mm. Now, if that is not indicative of a bigger problem, I mean, that what that means, and I mean, I'm going to make a very simple example. It means the ham that you're going to buy now in September, you'll be paying for in December. Okay. That is a huge financial burden to carry as a person. Yes, it answers your immediate question of how do you feed your family now, but it means you're digging yourself into a deeper and deeper debt. And the investment in property, I mean, one of the things Riley made me aware of is I think the top 10 most richest people in the world, or 10% of the richest people in the world have invested in property on some level or another. So it is sort of, as you said, Gareth, a sort of first point of call, and could be easier than you trying to start some big conglomerate. Just start with where you are. Look at the scenario of where you are.
And Rally, you said this too, that the only real good debt you can get is property debt in terms of bonds and home loans and that kind of thing, because at least that, you know the term, you will end up with an asset at the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, so they say capital is born in property. And that's quite true, because it's one of the things that actually the banks will ask you, even if you want to start your own business and you're looking to raise big monies, they'll ask you, what assets have you got? And one of the, on the list of assets, one of the ones that actually become attractive is some kind of a property. So certainly, I will still encourage people that have opportunities to be able to get involved in getting good, what I call good debt, which is basically debt to be able to finance a real estate transaction. Because I think, you know, And it's one of those assets that in general will last longer. And just on average, the appreciation value of properties is higher than most assets that you can ever invest in.
The word's collateral, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm very excited that we've launched a range of podcasts. I think it's the first of its kind in Africa, a range of podcasts on property. I hope this doesn't suddenly cause a whole lot of people to go and take 21 million rand loan, because we're not always sure we can pay those back. Certainly, the podcast is a starting point, and the fact that you're doing these learnerships, that you're providing an opportunity for people who want to study real estate to do so.
Yeah.
That's a terrific move. So if you want to advance your own property portfolio, you want to learn from the life of Raleigh Mampwele or from Lerato's other guests who have interesting insights into home loans, into financing, into gearing, into all of these things that will help to put the whole picture together for you. You don't want to miss these podcasts. We're very proud to be able to offer them to the audience and to you especially if it's something that you're interested in. Raleigh, thank you so much. And Lerato, we hope to speak to you again soon.
Yes, of course, Gareth. I always enjoy talking to you. Remember, the podcast is on every Wednesday from 10 until 11 on cliffcentral.com.
But because it's a podcast, you can get it
anytime. So go, anytime, wherever you are.
Go back to episode 1 and listen to all of them from there on. If you're interested in property, this is the simplest, easiest, cheapest way for you to start learning about it and to get involved.
Yes, indeed.
Fantastic. Thank you, Gareth. Thank you both.
All right. So today, 10 a.m. South African time here, Wednesday, living it up with Lerato. Mubs, very, very practical stuff that here. Just to show you that it's not the most daunting thing in the world, owning property. It's just about applying yourself.
Do yourself a favor and download the podcasts to that show and then carry on listening, because it just sounds like you'll learn new things every time you listen to Lerato and her guests. So it's really informative, useful stuff.
Exactly. And there's people that are actually doing it and therefore can give you the best information around it. Right. So we're going to take a little song break because we've got Gareth's interview with Garth Taylor coming up after this. And once we get through the song, we'll tell you more about it.
CliffCentral.com.